This is a speech given by Howard Lyman at the 2nd Annual Animal Film Festival in Vancouver on June the 3rd. Howard picks up right after a showing of his new film, Mad Cowboy, the documentary, which will be shown on PBS during June and July.
I can't go out and put this into everybody's hands. I can't come to everybody's home and show it to their family and their friends. But you can. And when we talk and look at what's happening right now, I'm the most optimistic person in the world because the only thing in the world that changes human behavior is crisis. We have a crisis of a magnitude that is unbelievable. Can you believe we have over 6 billion people on planet Earth? The most people that have ever been on the Earth in the history of the entire planet. We have 1.25 billion people going to bed hungry at night. We have 1.25 billion people going to bed overweight and obese. In North America, we have 1 out of every 2 folks dying of heart disease. 1 out of 3 have cancer. 1 out of 4 are dying of cancer. 6 out of every 10 North Americans today are considered to be overweight or obese. Diabetes is growing at a phenomenal rate. What could be better? What could be better than to have crisis like that staring us in the face, that we need to understand that we're killing the animals, but the animals are killing us? The famous German philosopher Goethe said, "We hide everything in plain sight." I went to my wife's 50th class reunion last year. Walked in the door. 1/3 of her class had already died. My wife and I walked in the door weighing exactly the same as we did when we graduated 50 years ago. But nobody wanted to talk to us about our diet. You never saw so many canes, crutches, and walkers in all of your life. Everybody standing around talking about their last operation, their favorite doctor, where they could get the cheapest meds. But nobody wanted to talk to my wife and I about our diet until I went to the bathroom. I walk into the bathroom and some clown comes up to me and said, "Do you ever sneak out and get a burger? You ever go to McDonald's? Have you ever given some thought of how you educate people in the washroom?" Well, I will tell you right now, I was not for a loss of words. I looked him in the eye and said, "By the way, does your poop float? Remember that it doesn't do any good to point at somebody and say, 'Let me tell you what you ought to eat.' Their eyes roll up. You can hear their ears slam shut. They don't want to hear what you have to say. It's about doing your thing, walking your talk, living your life, having enough up here so that when they tap you on the shoulder and said, 'Are you one of those V people?' that you got a 35-second window of opportunity of telling them why." You know, I came from Montana. Montana is not the hotbed of vegetarianism. You know, when I was in Montana, I was one of the first 300-pound football players in North America. I never found an animal product I wouldn't stuff down my throat. I thought I needed the protein and the iron to go out on the field and knock the other guy down. And when I quit playing football, I kept eating the same way, and I got well over 300 pounds. My blood pressure was sky high. My cholesterol was over 300. I'd sit down and have lunch, and my nose would bleed. I was concerned. But remember, I came from Montana. I'd rather be caught riding a stolen horse than admitting to somebody I was thinking about becoming a vegetarian. But I did the best thing I could. I became a closet vegetarian. I didn't tell anybody about it. I cut the flesh out of my diet, and for 1 year, I subsisted on mainly lettuce and dairy products. I lost a little weight. My blood pressure went down slightly. My cholesterol went down slightly. And I thought, wow, If I can do that, being the world's worst vegetarian, just think what I could do if I became vegan, and I could spell vegan. I became vegan. I lost 130 pounds. My blood pressure went from sky high to normal. My cholesterol from 300 to 135. I couldn't hardly wait to tell my friends, my family. I was even considering telling my mother-in-law. Been married 38 years. Never one time in 38 years have I ever regretted marrying my wife. She cannot say that, but I married better than she did. But I will tell you that she came with a mother-in-law that was a extreme test. But you know, I learned that you could not go and tell your friends and family that they ought to change their diet. It was about walking your talk. It was about doing your thing. Every time you reach into your pocket, every time you pull out your wallet, every time you spend a dollar, you're voting on the future. I have a good friend that lives in Vancouver. He's about as much of an athlete as you can ask, somebody that is strong and robust and quick, and believe it or not, he's a Mountie, and he's a vegan. Can you imagine what an impact that has on the people that he works around? That he shoots straighter? That he runs faster? A wonderful, wonderful personality. And no animal has to die for him to live. Can you imagine what an impact that makes? Each and every one of us here can do exactly the same thing. It's not about going out and shouting to somebody, be a vegan. It's about living it. It's about doing what you can do. And when somebody comes around and taps you on the shoulder and says, are you one of the V people? Then you want to talk to them about it. You know, so what I want to say to you right now is, what could be better than to be in Vancouver right now? And some people went out and committed themselves to putting together a film that educates people about what's happening to animals. It is not some animal standing belly deep in grass that's out there having an idyllic lifetime, and then they bring them in and they're smiling and running up the runway to the kill floor saying, yippee skippy, I'm going to be a McDonald's burger tomorrow. Those animals don't want to die. Those animals are not here for us to eat. When we eat them, we end up with occluded arteries. We end up with the diseases that are killing us. And so we need to educate ourselves. We need to be prepared. But all people are not concerned just about how animals are dying. And a lot of people don't care about their health. But believe it or not, in North America right now, there are 79% of the people that claim to be environmentalists. I just wrote a book that's called No More Bull. And in that book, we said that environmentalists that eat meat are like philanthropists that will not give to charity. In my opinion, you cannot be an environmentalist and still eat meat. And so we got 79% of the people out there that are beating their chests, jumping up and down and talking about the fact that they're environmentalists. Did you ever stop and think about the church they built in Iowa in 1850? This church was built in Iowa in 1850, been in continuous use for 155 years. After they built it, they took a picture of it. All of the land around the church was farmed. They took a picture and they hung it on the wall in the church. The church in continuous use for 155 years. 155 years later, they got out a camera, took another picture of the church, and lo and behold, all of the land around that church was still farmed. But in 155 years, the level of that land had dropped 10 feet. They had lost 10 feet of soil the way they were farming around that church, and nobody walked into that church and said, look, we're a quarter of an inch lower today than we were last year. But when they looked at the pictures and it was 10 feet different, all of a sudden we understand the fact that the majority of us that came here as boat people a little over 300 years ago, we had the deepest, richest topsoil on the face of the earth. In a little over 300 years, we have lost 75% of all of the topsoil that was here when the boat people landed. It takes 500 years to produce 1 inch of topsoil. We haven't been here long enough to produce an inch of topsoil. We've lost 3/4 of what we have. We have a crisis of an unbelievable magnitude. I want to talk to you about Easter Island. Easter Island was a lot like North America when the people first came there. It had deep, rich topsoil. It had trees. It had lots of fish. It was the most wonderful place in the world to live, and they decided that they had so much spare time that what they would do is that they would carve large stone monuments and move them down and stand them up on the beach. And the bigger stone monument you made, the greater your stature was. But there was something that happened in Easter Island that nobody paid any attention to. Some stowaways showed up. They weren't worried about them because they weren't eating the human food. And so they paid no attention to the rats that came to the island. But the rats were eating the palm nuts from the trees. And here the people were, cutting down the trees to sled the big rock monuments down to the beach and stand them up. And all of a sudden they looked at it and said, lo and behold, look what's happened. There are no new trees growing because the rats had eaten all of the seeds. And here they were faced with a crisis. Was it more important to have stature to move a big rock monument down or quit cutting the trees? Because they needed the trees to build boats so that they could fish. But no, they were not going to live within the restraints of their environment. And so they cut down the last tree. And without the trees, there were no boats. They exhausted the soil. And then the people on Easter Island reverted to cannibalism. And you look at that and you say, well, that was an isolated case. It could never happen here. Ask yourself about the environment in the area that we're living in right now. British Columbia. I saw a picture. And the picture said, welcome to the forest. And for an area larger than the state of Rhode Island, there was not one living tree. Can you imagine the audacity of somebody going out and cutting down every tree for an area larger in the state of Rhode Island and leaving the sign up that said, welcome to the forest? What in God's world is wrong with us? When are we going to wake up to the fact that no matter what part of an inventory we want to take of the world, if we want to talk about topsoil, clean air, clean water, fish, Grand Banks and George's Banks, when the original explorers came over, they were dipping the fish out of the ocean. They wrote in their logs that they were worried their ships were going to run aground on the great schools of fish. And look at what we have today. The Grand Banks and the George's Banks are fished out. The Atlantic Ocean, they have actually dug the bottom of the ocean smooth with the nets that are out there that are removing 20 pounds of sea life for every pound of fish that is sold for human consumption. What in God's world is wrong with us that we have farm-raised fish today, that they have to dye the meat so that people will buy it, because if they don't, it comes out gray and it looks terrible and there is no market for it. And so what do? They take 2 pounds of sea life to put every pound of fish in your market today that is dyed. What's wrong with us? When are we going to wake up to the fact that somebody's got to stand up and say, the emperor has no clothes? I went on the Oprah show, I stood up and I told the truth. I told people we were grinding up cows and feeding them back to cows. That we were taking roadkill, deer, elk, possum, raccoons, grinding them up, feeding them back to cows. And then we were taking euthanized pets, dogs and cats, full of chemicals that were used to kill them. City of Los Angeles alone, 200 tons of dogs and cats a month were being ground up and turned into feed for our pets or our food animals. When I went on the Oprah show, I knew that there were 13 states that had a food disparagement law. That food disparagement law said it's against the law to say something about a perishable commodity that you know not to be true. I didn't say anything on the Oprah show that I did not believe to be true. I went on the Oprah show and I told Oprah that we had 100,000 cows a year that were fine at night, dead in the morning. And when I got done talking to her, her eyes were as big as saucers. She turned around and looked at the guy from the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and said, Dr. Weber, are we feeding cows to cows? I'll never forget what he had to say. He said, there's a limited amount of that going on. Near as I could tell, 95% of the cattle in the U.S. in factory feedlots are eating the remains of other animals, and then, damn it, the next thing out of Oprah's mouth gets us sued. She says, that stopped me cold. I'll never again eat a burger. Now, we taped that show. It took a couple of hours. Well, when we got done with it, I walked up to Oprah, and I said to her, I said, hey, Oprah, give me 10 minutes. I'll get you off of chicken. She said, only one animal a day. Can you imagine what it was like when I had a news magazine call me up and they said, do you know you're being sued along with Oprah Winfrey and Harpo Production? And I said, no. Can I put you on hold? I put them on hold. I raced into my library. I inventoried my vegetarian cookbooks. I knew those cattlemen wanted those vegetarian cookbooks bad. I went back and said, I can't talk to you now. I got to put in a call to Oprah. And I called Oprah and I said, hey, Oprah, we lose this suit. I'm throwing in my vegetarian cookbooks. You got to put up the money. Well, before we ended up going to Amarillo, Texas, USDA and FDA did exactly what I called for. They banned the feeding of cows, sheep, and goats back to cows, sheep, and goats. I thought, sure, we'd go to Amarillo. The judge, a tough old lady, 72-year-old, I thought, sure, she was going to say, case dismissed. Little did I realize, Amarillo, Texas. Not the end of the world, but it is clearly visible from there. You're going to give the world an enema? You take the hose to Amarillo. I drove into town. I found that the largest employer in Amarillo was a slaughter facility killing cattle. Bumper stickers all over town said the only mad cow in Texas is named Oprah. I knew we were in trouble. I went to my lawyer and I said, we need a change of venue. We went to that sweet little 72-year-old judge and said, Your Honor, we want a change of venue. She picked up the hammer, slapped it down, and said, motion denied. Bring in the jury pool. They marched in 140 people. You never saw so many hats, boots, and belt buckles in all your life. I leaned over to my lawyer and said, we better write the appeal today. We haven't got a chance. Well, end of the day, we had 12 jurors absolutely steeped in the cattle culture. I'm talking to my lawyer, and he said, tomorrow they're going to call you to the stand. He said, the first question they're going to ask you, is it not true that you are a vegetarian? I said, I can handle that. He said, you damn well better, or we're going to lose. Sure enough, they call me to the stand. The plaintiff's attorney, he's looking at the jury. He's laughing and giggling, and he says, I can't hardly say this. Mr. Lyman, is it not true that you are a vegetarian? I looked at the jury and said, I will not apologize for that that has saved my life. And the jury sitting there nodding their head, never again in that trial did they ask me if I was a vegetarian. But they asked me every question you can imagine, day after day. Finally, they said to me, Mr. Lyman, has anybody ever called you irresponsible? I said, yes. My lawyer sitting over there saying, no, no, no. The plaintiff's attorney thinks he's found the key to the Gordian knot, and he says, who? I looked at the jury and said, my wife. They're sitting there going, yeah, been there, done that. Well, we were in that courtroom for 6 weeks. At the end of 6 weeks, that jury came back and found Oprah, Harpo Production, and myself not liable. And I thought, oh, vindication. Finally, I stood up and told the truth. We won the case. Now I can go on with my life. But no, the cattleman turned around and appealed it to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. We're in the Fifth Circuit Court for a year. They come back with a unanimous panel decision that Oprah, Harpo Production, or myself were not liable. And then in their opinion, they wrote and they said, everything that Lyman said on the show was true, and the truth is not actionable. And I thought, finally, vindication, it's over. How in the world can you find that to be ambiguous? The cattleman asked for a rehearing. It was denied. And then they turned around and sued Oprah, Harpo Production, and myself in state court. Not being a resident of Texas, thank God. I moved it from state court to federal court. Oprah said, that's the bus I want to be on. So she moved her part of the case with me. After 6 years, 6 years for standing up and telling the truth, spending hundreds of thousands of dollars, not only to protect my right of free speech, but to protect yours. They did not sue me because they thought I lied. They sued me because they wanted every media outlet in North America to know that if you were going to take the issue and talk about what's wrong with our food supply, that they are willing to spend millions of dollars dragging you through court. 6 years. But you know, the amazing thing is when you're given lemons, make lemonade. 1 million people saw the show. Over 200 million people knew about it at the end of the trial. Our job is not to complain about what we don't have. It's not about saying, well, we don't have the resources that they have. Our job is to realize that this is a fight that we cannot lose. If we do not change the way food is produced and consumed in North America, in our lifetime, there will be no future for our children and grandchildren. That's as hard and cold a fact as there is. We are going towards that cliff at 200 miles an hour. I want you to realize that both north and south of the border, we have the best government that money can buy. The only way we're going to win this issue is in the streets with the consumer doing what we can do. And that is not to go out and try to change the laws. It's not about going out and spending more money than the multinational companies. It's about going out there, living our lives in what we believe. Show people that you can live longer, you can live healthier. You can do anything. You can be involved in law enforcement. You can be in education. You can be in the music business. The list goes on and on. This is not about, oh, I can't do this because nobody else is doing it. My God, I came from agriculture. Can you imagine how many cattlemen have come up to me and slapped me on the back and said, oh, geez, I'm glad you're still alive? Do you want to know how many that came around and said, why the hell don't you go back and eat meat and die and get out of here? Well, I am the happiest person alive on the planet. 1979, when I was paralyzed and they told me I had less than one chance in a million I would ever walk again, I never envisioned that I would be able to stand in front of you and tell you my story. I walked out of the hospital in 1979 with a one in a million operation. I don't think I walked out accidentally. It isn't about making money. The thing that I have more of than anybody I know is friends. I have 46,000 names in my Rolodex. When I travel, I try to never stay in hotels or motels. I try to stay with my friends. And that group of friends continues to grow. And for me, I think I am the most blessed person alive on the planet. I want to thank the people that came and put this program together today, that gave of themselves. I want you, when this is over, to go into the break room where the tables are set up, where there's free literature, where there's food, where we happen to have some copies of my books and videos for sale. You didn't think I'd ever get to that, did you? Now, what I want you to do is help me save the future for our children and grandchildren. That's what it's all about. It's not about lakeshore property. It's not about a bigger car. It's about the absolute future of the species. Most people don't see it, but it's here, it's now, it's in front of us. Go and read Jared Diamond's book, Collapse, and you will see where society after society on planet Earth disappeared because they would not live within the environmental constraints of their environment. Get Lester Brown's new book, you know, Plan B 2.0, and you will see that we're spending down in the United States $30 to $60 billion to import $20 billion worth of oil. Can you imagine how much solar power and wind power would be available if we would actually went and spent that money so that there would be a future? And so I ask you now, join with me. Let's become part of the solution, not part of the problem. There's enough people here to change this community. Join with me. Let's see that there is a future. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Howard.
Find out more about Howard Lyman from his website, www.madcowboy.com. Recorded by Radio EcoShock at www.ecoshock.org.